Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 461 of the JV Club with my absolutely sublime guest, Bridget Todd. Ay, ay, ay. My new hero, my new favorite person. I know you're going to love this episode. Bridget is so spectacular and so inspiring and just so great. I did a lot of gushing over how great she is on this episode. I want you to prepare yourselves for it, but I also want you to know you're going to be nodding along with all of my praise. You're going to enjoy it. So check it out. Hope everybody's doing well, and I'll talk to you next week. I am loving the, I can't tell if it's a dress or if it's just a top, but.
It's a dress.
I love a ruffle. I love a ruffle.
Thank
Those
you.
Are great straps.
Thank you. It's the nap dress. It's so comfortable.
Okay. All right.
I'm obsessed.
I mean, you're comfortable and you're wearing something that actually also is very cute. And I am fully in like the cliche Zoom, like full on sweat jacket. Just going with the hoodie. Talk about comfy.
I love it.
Just very, very plain. And I think maybe a little bit of food on it. I think maybe a little food. Let's not lie to ourselves. I'm going to go ahead and say there's food on this.
It's just a little extra decoration.
Just shows I'm living my life. I'm living my best life and eating food.
Exactly.
And eating food is important. So it's fine. That's a good sort of, I mean, it's so kind of surface level in one way, but also very practical in these life and times of pandemics where you sort of do have to figure out like, what is a thing I can put on that looks like I made an effort but is also supremely comfortable and I can just slug around in and do a bunch of Zoom calls if I need to, right? I mean, that's kind of a thing now. That's a thing we have to think about.
Definitely. See, I always opt for something that has like some sort of embellishment on the shoulder.
So
like
so
when I'm
smart.
In a Zoom box, it's like, oh, this person made an effort, but you have no idea what's going
totally.
On, at, you know, below the shoulders.
It's great. It's great. You know what? Maybe I could just do like some, I'll bedazzle just the shoulders of this hoodie and I'm going to be golden. I feel like I've done that too with, if I have to do any kind of an event where I feel like I need to show that I made an effort, but you can't see my whole face, I find myself like really going over the top in eye makeup in a way that I never did before. Like it's all got to sit right here. It's got to be all the zhuzh and zazz has to be right in these two little quarter shaped holes. That's all people get.
Yeah, you're showing up for like a casual work Zoom done up like Cleopatra.
I hate to say yes, but basically... Basically, yes. But I'm also the person who would go into a Mac store and I'm absolutely the person who's like, please make me look like everything that's going on right now with like blue here, pink here, the Bowie fucking, you know, lightning bolt. Like I want all of that. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. Why not? If you have to put makeup on, make it art, be something that, you know, have it be something that you feel great about and just illuminates your inner beauty, you know?
I absolutely agree. I just started watching Euphoria and I don't know if you watched that
oh,
show, but
girl.
All of the girls, their eye makeup.
No, their makeup is so killer.
Yes.
It's insane. It's absolutely, yes, I absolutely think that every time Jules shows up in season one, I'm like, what is happening? I want all of this.
Rhinestones, the whole thing.
Yeah. And then you have Zendaya, who obviously is playing a bit of a tomboy slash if I'm this high, there's no way I'm going to, you know, put an effort in it, and is still just a drop dead gorgeous like creature from heaven.
Yes.
It's insane. Well, I'm glad you've got on board the Euphoria train. I only jumped onto it last year and was like, oh my God, because it's one of those shows that hurts to watch because it's so poignant and it just even if you weren't a drug addict or, you know, a kid sort of in the extremes of what some of those kids are going through, there's a through line, that thread that we all experience as teenagers where you're just like, oh, this is crushing my soul, but in the best way. Like, I can't look away. I get it, you know?
It is hard. And watching Euphoria, I mean, I wasn't having experiences like the Euphoria teens, but watching it reminds me how everything was so heightened when you were young.
Yes.
Like every experience felt like it was on 10, on 100 all the time. That's definitely
yes.
something I remember from my youth.
Which is amazing, because the fact that they could make those things actually be as high stakes as we only felt like they were, and that we could still relate to it, like, nobody was, I definitely wasn't, like, beating anyone up or, like, I don't know, almost hitting someone with my car. I feel like a lot goes down in season one, not to mention what I've seen so far of season two, but it's true. I mean, where were you a teenager, Bridget? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a very small town called Midlothian, Virginia. It's right outside of Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's...
Love Richmond.
Yeah, it's a nice little city. If you've ever seen the movie Donnie Darko, fun fact.
I have.
Middlesex, Virginia, where Donnie is growing up, that was based on my town of Midlothian, Virginia. So that gives you a sense of what it was like for me.
It absolutely does. And I'm going to trot out two things, one of which I've said on the podcast before. The other, I'm just saying a thing that we all have said a million times. But as a creature from the American Southwest, everything in Virginia and the surrounding areas that have the most stuffy British names of, like, colonization, it's such a different experience. Everything, I feel like everything in the Southwest, and this is certainly true across the United States, but you're not going to get really any of that in the Southwest. You will just get the names of tribes who were, you know, all but eliminated,
right,
and Spanish names from other conquests and stuff. And but yeah, we don't have anything like Middlesex or Midlothian is... That's really something. If you told me that Midlothian was like the name of a species in Star Trek, I'd be like, ah, the Midlothians. Yes, we've struck a peace accord with them many centuries ago.
Yeah, I grew up on a street that was called Christendom. And I remember driving there with a friend and he was like, I feel like we're going back in time to like Middle Earth or something.
Totally. Well, too, I mean, did you have the same kind of Civil War stuff that was just, again, that to me, that's the other thing I was going to say is, when I started working in Georgia all the time many, many years ago, that was my first real introduction to, oh my God, like Confederate soldier graves. This is nuts. Just not something I was exposed to at all as a young person. So everything was in the abstract when you're learning history. And being in Richmond, especially in the Virginia area, is just, talk about traveling back in time. It's so different, I think. Was that your experience? I mean, to have, that's what you knew. So obviously you didn't have my experience in Tucson, but it's just, you're confronting that stuff in such a more immediate way.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny. You're exactly right. It's something that I never really thought about until I moved away. I live in DC now, and so, you know, a little bit removed, but, you know, when I was growing up, every year when I was in elementary school, we had a school-wide holiday called Civil War Day, where all the kids would dress up as either Union or Confederate soldiers and then do a little like march on our like school lawn. And you know, it was such a big part of my education growing up. Like, I feel like I was taught, and obviously this is all kinds of effed up, but I was taught in school that...
Well, it's good to talk about.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. We were taught that the Civil War was a states' rights issue. Like, the fact of, like, slavery was almost an afterthought. And we were taught that, you know... I mean, it's pretty clear that the South lost. We were taught sort of like, oh, who's to say who won or lost? You know,
what?
The truth is kind of somewhere in the middle. Like,
would I tell
you that there is a vibe that like the South maybe did not lose in Virginia? Like that's not like a given thing. And
yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And we driving to school every day, we would go down Monument Avenue where used to have just like monuments of the Confederacy. And I honestly never thought twice about it until I moved. I never even questioned if that was like a cool thing or not.
Yeah. Well, that's such a good, I mean, that is one of the things I love talking about on this podcast, too, is just the reality of being a young person and accepting what you are handed. Even the most extraordinary among us, the people who go on to advocate for huge social change and who are wanting to reach those young people at an earlier age than you and I were when, you know, we started to kind of go, huh, wait, now hold on. Or maybe you even have those moments once in a while, but they're just sort of glazed over by whatever the kind of adult culture around you is having you focus on. But that, you know, it's so true. It's like, hey, that's just what you were taught. So, you know, it's asking a lot of kids. to sort of navigate that on their own. Like, you don't know what question to ask because you don't know what you don't know.
Absolutely. And it's so funny.
You know?
I've been thinking so much about this of like, you know, I grew up small town, very conservative, very Southern. And I, in my, I guess, like, neighborhood, we were sort of like one of a very small amount of Black families on our street. And so I grew up kind of feeling like, oh, I definitely knew that I definitely felt like an outsider just because of that. But then being in such a conservative town, like the way that I felt, I mean, I used to stay up at night as a youth and like think about how I felt almost like an alien. Like I just felt so out of place in all the
like
ways.
Like you belonged with the Midlothians?
Yes,
no,
I'm
totally
yes.
kidding. No, but sure, sure.
And, you know, like thinking about like what questions to ask and I really could not conceptualize a life outside of my small town. I had no sense of what that was like. And if it wasn't for things like the internet or like magazines that helped me sort of visualize what a life outside of my small, you know, Southern town would be like, I don't know where I would be. And so I wouldn't have even known the questions to ask of like, what is life? Yeah. How are people living life in other cities and other countries? I wouldn't have even known the questions to ask to even like put that together.
Yeah, yeah. And that extended through, did you go to just like a public high school in Midlothian?
So I went to an all-girls Catholic high school. St. Gertrude High School. Shout out to the Gators.
Hey, Gators.
Yeah. And it's so funny because even that experience, I look back on it and I'm like, oh yeah, it was like a pretty progressive Catholic girls school. And I remember going back to that school when I was an adult, like just to visit and seeing all this like anti-abortion stuff all over the walls, like join the pro-life club. And I was like, wow, did I just completely sanitize this memory of what my school was actually like?
Did you? What
do
you
think? I think I did. I think I like just didn't have a framework for what was actually happening in my school to really like put it into the correct sort of like box in my mind of like, okay, this is anti-abortion or okay, this is like not progressive. And I just left school kind of thinking, you know, like, oh, it was a fairly progressive Catholic school. And looking back, I'm like, oh, it actually wasn't.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, what do you think was, what made you at the time feel like it was progressive? Did you feel like it was an environment in which you could kind of ask certain questions or that you were certain things that you guys were studying in school? Or do you feel like you literally have no idea where you got the idea that it was progressive?
What a good question. I honestly feel like it was some combination of not really doing a lot of interrogation while it was happening and then seeing things in popular culture that like, and kind of conflating that with my actual experience. And so it's like, when I look back on those times, I'm like, oh, I was being educated by like, you know, the Von Trapp family or something. And like, truly that was like not the experience. I don't know. It's such a good question, but, and it's possible that maybe the ways that my school was not very progressive became more pronounced when I left. So another fun fact about my school, it was an all-girls school, but we have like a brother school, which is Benedictine. And one of our notable alumni from that school is Steve Bannon.
Lucky duck. Lucky, lucky, lucky.
So yeah, part of me wonders if maybe they got less, maybe they were sort of like not progressive or anti-progressive one way or the other. And then as I left, maybe things got more kind of dialed up. That's the only thing I can really think.
And was the kind of racial makeup of the school, was that kind of similar to the street that you lived on? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or were there communities in which you felt like, interesting, there's more people of color here at this one activity that I do, but not at my school, but yes, at my church, or yes, in my sports or whatever? Did you sort of see those numbers fluctuate?
Yes.
Or was it consistent?
So this is a great question. So my high school was actually fairly diverse. And that was like one of the reasons my parents chose it, because, you know, there are a lot of private and religious schools in Virginia. It's like, they've got to have more private schools in Virginia per capita than other states. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but it feels true. And my parents specifically chose that school because it was more diverse. And so I was very lucky that even though my, you know, day to day where I lived in Midlothian was like not super diverse, at least where we lived was not, my school, which was in the city of Richmond proper, like in the city, was definitely a more diverse experience. And honestly, like that was something that really, so I guess when I think back to why I remember my high school education as being like progressive and inclusive, that actually might be part of it, just because it was like very diverse.
Well, two, just what you said, I mean, I guess I don't know about where your middle school and elementary schools were, but if you are a growing young woman and you have the opportunity to be going to school and it is in Richmond, Richmond in and of itself has more flavor to it. There are certain, you know, my experience being there was like, you know, there were things about it that I was surprised by in, again, in a sort of like, oh, this is the way that segregation expresses itself in modern day Richmond, but also a lot of like wonderful blending of cultures. And, you know, I mean, I really kind of fell in love with parts of it.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to going back. And I say that having been there in the dead of summer, and I hate heat and humidity. So if I'm walking down the street just melting and sort of like having that like inner thigh rub where I'm like, I'm going to have a rash from the amount of like sweat of my thighs rubbing together in this heat and still be like, I can't wait to go back. That's a pretty good sign.
Yes. I mean, it is a really cool place. And my parents, they still live there, and my brother lives there. And like every time we talk, they're like, oh, are you going to move back? You should move back. And it's so funny, like talking about your actual lived experience not sort of being aligned with your memory of the experience. When mm-hmm. I was growing up, all I knew about where I lived is that I wanted to get the fuck out. I wanted to move to New York. I wanted to move to LA.
Sure.
I wanted to move to Berlin. Like, all I wanted to do was get out. And I remember feeling so isolated and feeling so out of place. But I also remember Richmond had, like, I was going to punk clubs when I was in high school. I was going to, like, there was this club. It's long been closed down, but there was this club, Twisters, that I, like, used to, like, sneak my way into. I was seeing, like, really cool DJs and stuff. And so it's not like so even though I was there and my memory of it was that I hated it, I was still having these, like, hugely informative, rich cultural experiences that really made me who I am today and helped me understand who I am. But when I think back to it, like, I just remember that teenage longing of, like, I'm going to leave this town.
Sure.
I can't wait to get out. Yeah, it's so interesting how your memory of the experience and the actual, like, lived experience can sometimes be completely different.
It's so true that the emotional life that we have, that sometimes it's like running parallel to our experiences, and other times it's like, so it's like, oh, I can't even see, looking back now, I can't see the actual road I was on because I was clearly on this other totally different emotional road. I want to come back to, I'm very interested in the fact that you listed three cities and one of them was Berlin. So I want to find out where you kind of got the idea of it being a great place to live. I also want to circle back to the Richmond thing and say, you know, I'm also coming from a place of like utter, like, luxury, privilege, however you want to think about it, and say, as a white woman living in Los Angeles, to say, well, I found, you know, I was in, the only time I've been to Richmond was in 2019, I think. And so it was before Black Lives Matter. It was before, I mean, to a degree, certainly the big groundswell, and it was before George Floyd, and it was before, you know, so those conversations about Monument Avenue were sort of happening mm-hmm. undercover, or like in, you know, they just, it wasn't the front page news. And so when all of that happened, I was so glad that I had been to Richmond and had walked those streets, because I had a very different understanding of it kind of viscerally than I would from, you know, my little enclave in L.A. And but it's also easy for me to say that. It's easy for me to say, like, I thought the conversations that were happening around that were so thoughtful and were, you know, people's voices were being heard and the arguments that were being made and all of that, which is conflict, which, again, it's very easy and luxurious to not be in the middle of that and be like, it feels like growth, everyone. Like, this is the time. Like, let's push through. Let's push through. Like, let's hear each other. And, you know, but again, it's like I'm way over here going like, oh, I love that you guys are talking about it. Like, yes, put graffiti all over that, you know, Confederate general that you've had to stare at for lifetimes. Please. I love it. This is progressive. BLM.
Yes.
Like, I don't want it to seem like that. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But because that's, again, like, you know, living, being in Atlanta, I would say the same thing. I'm like, oh my God, I love the culture here. Like, you know, 50% of my coworkers are people of color. I worked on The Game when I lived there, which is a black show, and I was
the only
white girl there when I was there. And I kind of, I mean, I dug it. But again, that's coming from a place of like, I would say that to my makeup artist, and she'd be like, oh, what's that? Oh, that's, oh, you love Atlanta. Oh, it's perfect. That's right. We're all integrated. Everything's great. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, oh God, I'm such a fucking idiot.
Okay, first of all, shout out to The Game, because that shit is iconic.
Oh, so good. I like lost my mind when I met Brandy. I was like, oh, keep it together. Keep it together. Keep it together. She's so sweet and wonderful. Everyone was so great. Yeah. Shout out to The Game. Big shout out to the game.
I'm obsessed.
And then they revamped it and I couldn't do it because I was doing something else. And they invited my character back and I was like, I want to. But rad. Great group of people. And again, just like a great thriving city with, you know, and everything that Tyler Perry's done for this, you know, in terms of like creating his studio. I mean, I just dug it. But again, it's very easy for me to be like, I don't know, I feel like Atlanta's really integrated. Like, it's really great. I mean, it just, you know. But one of the things I love about you and what you do and the voice that you have, and more so not just your voice, which is wonderful, but also the fact that I feel like the second you got any kind of a platform, you were like, okay, that's enough about me. Like, I'm going to continue doing my stuff, but like, how do I foster new voices? How do I expand this platform rather than own the platform? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I love the way that I feel like you approach things it's very positive. And I don't mean that in a way of like, we're not allowed to be fierce and angry when it's time to be fierce and angry, of course. But I feel like there's so much joy in what you do and what you're bringing to not just podcasting, but to sort of, you know, social culture. And so I'm just so impressed by what you're up to. And I think it just peps me up. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Like, you just really articulated. This is like, if I would want anyone to say anything about what I do, you just said it. Like, you know, one of the things sometimes people tell me that when they listen to the show, it's like, oh, it's like nice to hear these guests, but I don't really hear a lot from you. Like, what do you think? And I think the reason is just because I am so lucky to be in community with people who are really doing just amazing, inspiring stuff every day. And I just want to give them shine. I just want to like tell their story and amplify their voices. And like, you know, I think they're people that the world needs to know about. And so, you know, I take that as a real, that I feel like that's my mission. Like, that was what I was put on this earth to do. And I also feel as women, as people of color, as traditionally marginalized people, so often our story is about, you know, challenges and obstacles and hardships. And that is absolutely a reality of the experience of being a woman or a person of color or a queer person or a trans person or an immigrant or anything like that. However, we also experience joy. We also experience triumph. We also experience like good things. And so I wanted to make sure that our stories aren't just about all of our challenges, but also about all of the joy and positivity and hope and love and laughter that makes being us, you know, us, you know, that makes up our experience.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Biz, host of One Bad Mother. Whether you're a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I signed my stepson up for a camp that is actually in another state. I feel really stupid, and I don't think we're going to get the money back.
And then he found out that the car manual is a book about cars, so now he's reading our car manual.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job. Download One Bad Mother on MaximumFun.org, and yes, there will be swears.
Were you also, in this not so progressive, but we kind of thought it was progressive, all girls school, were you sort of a shining light there? I mean, did you have, were your friends like, I mean, I know that you felt like, I got to get out of here, but was that what you were projecting outwardly? Or would people have said like, oh, I love Bridget. Like, she's so fun and just joyful and thoughtful. And, you know, she hears me. She, you know, she's the person I call when I'm heartbroken because I feel like I'm going to be heard. Like, how do you feel like you were perceived by others when you were in high school?
What a good question. I was definitely a weirdo. So for sure.
Love it. Own it first and foremost.
For sure.
I'm all about it.
yeah, I think I was really positive. I was in a student club called SPAP, which stood for Spreading Positive Attitudes Among Peers.
I mean, I guess I just need 1 second to just take SPAP in really quick. It's like somehow the catchiest, least catchy acronym I've ever heard. I love it. SPAP. It's like you feel like maybe you're saying it wrong. You're like, wait, did I get one of the letters wrong? No, it's definitely SPAP. It's definitely SPAP.
Yeah. I mean, I
love it.
Yeah. I think that does kind of encapsulate what I was like as a young person that like, I certainly got shitty grades, but I had a good attitude about it.
What do you mean by shitty grades? What are you saying? Like you were flunking classes
because
you were
like,
spapping too much? Or
yeah, I mean, it was. So my dad is an engineer and my mom is a doctor. However, I have no head for like science, numbers, that kind of thing. Like, if anybody ever pulled up my calculator app on my iPhone, I would die of embarrassment if they could see like the things that I just checked out on my calculator. So I was perpetually like getting bad grades in math and science. But I just loved like I loved English class, I loved art classes, writing classes. Like, so my report card was often like good grades in anything that was like language or culture based. And then like, sometimes I wouldn't even get grades. I would get like, you know how when they're handing back the
incomplete.
Yeah, or I would get like, they would be handing back the papers and people would be like, oh, I got a B, I got a C. And mine would have no grade. It would say C me. You know shit is bad when you're getting a C me.
And first of all, do you have siblings?
I have an older brother.
Okay, and does he have any more of that aptitude that you feel like you didn't explore or didn't have or don't have?
Okay, so I'm so glad you asked me about this. So my older brother, he didn't get great grades, but what he lacked in grades, he was like, won every contest, was always like prom king, homecoming king, captain of this, captain of that. And to this day, like, he's like a minor celebrity in our town. Like, he is a big shot attorney. He ran for public office. He's the kind of person that when we walk around the streets of Richmond together, people run out of shops to greet him on the street.
Aww.
Like, he is like a local celebrity. And we're so proud of him, dude. Like, he's so cool.
I love that.
But yeah, he was, and that was definitely the vibe when we were growing up. Like, I was always Melvin's little sister, not Bridget, Melvin's little sister. And honestly, it made me proud. Like, even today, like, it makes me proud to be his little sister. And
Yeah. That suggests to me that you guys had a good relationship and that he respected you and like looked out for you and, you know, that you, because obviously it may have been a different situation if he were just amazing to everyone else and then he were just like the quintessential shitty older brother to you. I mean, that seems like when the comparisons have got to just be like, please, no, if you only knew the torture, you know, so, and also probably, I mean, possibly too, like, I don't know, I'm an only child, so I'm fascinated by sibling relationships, and it's always interesting, because it's never, people try to, like, and I, myself included, we try to kind of, you know, put things into categories, and we're like, okay, well, the older brother, younger sister dynamic is this, and the two sisters who are a little too close in age is competitive because of this, and the, you know what I mean, and it's like, you can only study so much psychology and do so many focus groups and like follow so many children through their lives before it's like, I don't know, it's almost like there's a million different variables that go into what makes a sibling dynamic what it is. But it sounds like you guys didn't have like a rough patch, you know, the way some siblings talk about, and then they get closer as they grow older.
Yeah, it's funny. We were at getting drinks with a bunch of friends and they were all going around talking about how like the different kind of relationships they had with their siblings. And it was like, oh, we don't really talk, or we didn't talk for years, and now we're getting our relationship back on track. And it made me feel so lucky and so grateful, because we have a like fairly uncomplicated relationship. Like, I know that he loves me and is proud of me. I am so beyond proud of him. And I guess the only thing in our relationship is that we don't really see each other a lot, because he lives in Richmond and works a ton, and just became a new dad for the first time. And, you know, nice. I'm doing my thing. And it's just one of those relationships that is so uncomplicated that I am really grateful for, because I realized, I was like, oh, people have really intense competitive feelings and jealousy and all of that, and we just have none of it. Like, he is such a cheerleader for me, and I'm so proud of him. And it just, yeah, I had not even considered that as something that I needed to be grateful for until that moment of like, oh wow, I really lucked out with my family relationship.
Sure. Like you said, we know what our relationship is, and until we see or really have a sense of something else reflected, it's like, oh my god, this isn't what everyone has. I got it. So he's an attorney, how were your parents about you guys not necessarily having those same interests and aptitudes? Were they like, be great at what you're great at, you know? You're our kids, we love you, we're proud of you. You're shaking your head.
Oh my God. I mean, my parents, oh my God. Like, with me, constant fights about my grades. Like, that was like the biggest thing, was just like, my parents really, really, it was very important to my parents that we excel academically. And, you know, it was constant fighting. I remember, like, my grades was like my constant source of anxiety and family tension. And, you know, when I went to college, my parents really wanted me to study something that was going to be practical, where I would be able to get a good job. And so my dad was like, I think that you should study engineering. I went to engineering summer camp at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. My brother did too. Okay. Like, my parents were really trying to push us a certain direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I went to college and double majored in literature and gender studies, my parents weren't super thrilled about that.
They're like, it's not 1969. What are you doing?
Yeah. And I think these days, you know, my brother definitely is the one who has the sort of quote unquote, like, respectable job. Like, when you're an attorney, it's like so, like, his job is so clear. You know, my parents can like talk about his job in a way that makes sense for them. My parents to this day have no idea what I do. Every day they're like, so what is it that you do again? And you know what? And they'll never know. They'll never get it. And that's okay, you know?
Yeah. It's really funny. I definitely feel like that, especially now, like year by year, more and more parents are having that experience with their kids. Like, as more and more stuff becomes like content based or, you know, influencer based, whether it's, you know, not from the like consumerist side of it, but genuinely from like what social media has brought to the table for many people, or podcasting or YouTube or whatever, and how to advance agendas and, you know, reach people and teach people and all of that kind of stuff. It's very true that, you know, we're only getting further away from those parents of ours who are like, is it on NBC? Like, and so, but you taught it. Didn't you teach at Howard?
I did. So I was teaching at Howard for a while, which
were they like, I know what that is.
Yes.
I can get on board. I'm going to tell everyone about that.
Yeah.
Please don't do anything that's more confusing than that.
So that was the time in my life where I was like, the sliver of my adult life where I was like making my parents proud in terms of what I did for a living. So at that time in my life, I was teaching full time at Howard University here in DC, which I loved. It was a job that I, you know, it was one of those jobs where I couldn't believe I got paid for it because I loved it so much. And I was working on a doctorate in literature at University of Maryland, College Park. And I initially, you know, thought like, I will teach full time at Howard while I try to, you know, complete my PhD. I ended up dropping out of my PhD program, which, like, to this day, my parents are like, are you going to go back to school? Are you going to go back to school? But this was like 10 years ago now, right? So, like, I think that the window has closed. But, you know, that was a time where they can look back and say, like, well, she was on a track that we, you know, that we liked for a little while.
Yeah. Was the PhD program, was it like, look, I'm trying to juggle too many things. And when you're getting your PhD, it has to be all or nothing kind of?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I just really...
Or also, you could just be like, I don't need this.
Yeah, I think for me, when I finished my undergraduate degree, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I didn't really have any prospects or plans, and so I just ended up applying to a bunch of graduate school programs, not knowing what to do, and I got accepted for, those combination master's PhD programs. I was just an undergrad when I was applying for these, and I was kind of doing it on a whim. And so when I got into some of these programs and also got offered funding, I was like, well, I don't have anything else on the horizon, so I may as well do it. And truly, I just had no business in a PhD program. My heart wasn't in it. I didn't like it. I was by far and away the most underperforming student in my program. I was in classes with people who had Ivy League master's degrees, who were really excited to come to lecture and tear your argument apart and tear your writing apart. They were all cool people, but I was just very much out of my league. It was a time in my life where I would wake up every day sad. I would wake up every day dreading having to go into class. And, I people always ask me should I go to grad school? What should I do? And I'll just say this. I mean, I can only speak from my experience, but my life started in earnest when I dropped out of my grad PhD program. And it was one of the hardest decisions I ever made in my life. I remember thinking, I told you earlier how I so badly wanted to get out of my small hometown. And I thought that when I got into this PhD program, that this was my chance to do it. And so when I dropped out, I thought I had given up on my chance of having a dynamic, exciting life, not in my small town. And so when I dropped out, I really thought I am resigning myself to, a life where I will maybe get a job at an office if I'm lucky, or, maybe I'll be someone's, I was applying for jobs at, and not that there's anything wrong with these kinds of jobs, but I had really told myself that any chance that I had to have any kind of a career or a passion or something that fueled my days, that was over. And now what I needed to do was try to get an administrative job somewhere. And that would be it.
Wait, so how does the PhD program, what's the connection with Howard that those two things sound like they're connected? Because you love teaching, but that felt like that went. Did that go away at the same time that the...
Yeah, so that's a great question. So when I was in my PhD program, I was TAing and I was teaching full-time at Howard. And, when you're in a PhD program, you might do some teaching here and there, but the main thing that you're supposed to be doing is research and writing. And so that's meant to be the thing that fuels you as a grad student. But for me, I loved being in the classroom. I loved talking to students and young people, and they gave me so much energy, and they were just so full of life and hope, and just being around them was intoxicating. And so I was it's actually being in the classroom that I enjoy. Yeah. The research and writing, I'm I hate it. I really didn't like. And so the fact that, the times where I was in doing classroom instruction, being with young people, that's what I wanted to fill my days with, that was the biggest warning that I had no business trying to get a PhD.
So you stopped teaching at Howard as part of the not stopping the PhD program. So, I'm only asking because I'm just trying to make sense of the thing, because the two things existing side by side, and both being in academia, mind you, it's not even that you were and then I would go to the roller derby and that's where I would really come alive.
Right.
Is that you still just that social interaction and the extroversion of the academia that you were experiencing, mm-hmm. being so different from the fusty, I'm living in my own head and my own very limited subject matter that I have tied myself to like a weight, but if you love that job, that's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, is just why you had to leave that and felt like this was the end of everything.
Yeah. So I ended up leaving my PhD program at University of Maryland, staying on as a full-time lecturer at Howard for, I think, 2 years. But a weird administrative quirk of the work I was doing at Howard is that if you did not complete your PhD, then you could only be what they called a full-time lecturer. And so you could only hold that job for, I think it was 7 years if you were not going to get a PhD. And so I knew that if I left my program, my job that I loved teaching at Howard had an expiration date because I wasn't planning on getting a PhD. And so, I think I did it for about 2 years after dropping out of my program. And then, I basically was do I want to be, out of a job now or in a couple years when I no longer am able to keep this job because I'm not going to get my PhD. It was a really, thinking back to that, it was a hard time.
Oh my God, I get it though. I mean, the idea that you're going to continue to be punished and like know that something that is meaningful to you is eventually going to be taken from you because of this choice you're making now in the moment. I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm sure this is something that you've talked about many times or that people bring up to you all the time, but it's just as a kid of two teachers, you know, just hearing that somebody loved their job and loved teaching and being with these young people and that someone was like, I'm sorry, but due to this box, checking this box and filling out this line, you can't do that forever if you love it and you're great at it. Like, it's like, oh no, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? That we're imposing these rules? I'm sure there's a reason for it that involves tenure or something, but it just seems really dumb because it seems like the people who are losing in that situation are the students.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, as well as the teacher. But it's like, I'm sorry, what about the people who are going to be leading our country and like making change in the world? They can't have a teacher there can't be a teacher at the same place for 14 years who doesn't have their PhD. I just don't get that. I guess I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And again, I'm sure there's some reason for why it exists that is like far over my head. But, you know, I think that everybody wins when you have people in classrooms who love to teach, right?
Yes.
Like my first time being in front of the classroom, I was like, where has this been all my life? After my first year of teaching, this is going to sound so cheesy. Virginia is like really big on personalized license plates. I went out and got a personalized license plate that said love to teach. Like I was,
oh,
I had
my God.
Found my
that
calling.
Is wonderful. Oh my gosh. Well, and so obviously even just what you're doing now, you're still having this engagement with people. You're meeting new people all the time and you're still, you know, you're still developing voices and all of that. And so I hope that you feel some of that spark, you know, whether it's inside of a classroom every day or, you know, taking all these different shapes. Lord knows you deserve to have that. I mean, you had a personalized license plate.
I know. It's so cheesy. But yeah, it's like.
No, but I love it, though.
And I mean, I feel like the kids of teachers really, it's like a special thing. Like, God bless teachers. Like, they don't get paid enough. They are doing such important work and it's so undervalued and they still do it.
It's so weird, especially because we continue to give a message. Like, as a culture, I feel like we continue to deliver the message that they're not important. And that's what blows my mind is like, how do we even still have any?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like when there's so much, there just seems such an afterthought to so much of how we handle public education, you know, private education, of course, too, but public education for everyone, that feeling like it's not a priority or an afterthought. And then that sentiment sort of expanding out to teachers who work so hard and are paid so little is just sort of, I just hope that, you know, I mean, I wish it would happen a year from now, but whenever I get too depressed about things that feel like they're so ingrained, I just try to think like, no, in 50 years, people are going to be appalled. Like we're appalled about things that happened 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Like in 100 years, there's going to be so much shit that we just feel like, look, we're just doing our best every day. We're trying. We're all trying to grow together. Like I've said this before, but one of the reasons that I feel like I'm not super self-righteous now in my life with my choices or with my causes, self-righteous and angry in the sense of like there's no room for anyone else to change or become better, is because I fully expect that 100 years from now someone will point to me and be like, can you believe that monster? Like, she didn't administer vaccines every day in India. What a piece of shit. Like, she had a podcast. Oh, are you changing the world? That's like the equivalent of like Marie Antoinette being like, I gave everyone cake. You know, it's like if I'm the monster in 100 years, we're good.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, I hope things are so awesome that what I'm doing now feels like a pittance, you know? And so that's, I mean, it's a little depressing because you want to be like, no, I want to be like the, you know, I want to be the person, because we look back on things and we're like, well, I know I never would have owned slaves, or I know I never would have done it. It's like, Of course, we all want to feel like we never, speaking of Berlin, and I want to get back to that, but like we all want to feel like we would have been the ones who were hiding Anne Frank or who were, no one wants to feel like a collaborator, of course. And it's really, really hard to say, well, no, like all of the thousands of people I know here and now, if we just picked all of us up and put us, you know, 200 years ago, I'm sure we would all have the exact same cultural values that we do now.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that keeps me up at night.
I'd love that to be true, but Jesus Christ, you know what we know. I don't know, man. So I'm going to be a monster in 100 years. I'm going to be a monster. Sure, parents were teachers and she didn't become a teacher? Are you kidding me right now? R.I.P. No, I don't want her to R.I.P. I want her ghost to wander the halls of the high school.
Right. Wait, so did you ever get pressure to become a teacher with your teacher parents?
Not really. My dad, I think, had an unfulfilled. He's a wonderful teacher and he definitely is a performer. He's a performative teacher, as I imagine you were, too. You know, very engaging, excited, could teach the same book every year and still seem like he just couldn't get like he still. I'm reading The Count of Monte. Well, I'm not reading it, but I've been having long discussions with my partner who's reading it. My dad used to teach that book. He wants to, like, talk about it with everyone. It doesn't matter. He taught it for, like, 30 years, and he's still like, I paid what the count finally escapes from him. You know, he just, like, he can connect in the moment in that he can keep it fresh in that way. And I think that part of him that's a performer really loved that I had those, you know, tendencies and that I was, like, kind of excited to pursue the sort of other side of that in doing theater and stuff like that. And to my mom to a lesser degree. But, yeah, I think they both were. I did have parents who were like, I don't know, what do you want to do? Which is, you know, I do feel grateful for. And to your point, I didn't know how valuable that was until I was older and I was like, pressure? Well, not really. Like, oh shit, you had that. Oh God. Yeah, you know, that's different. So, you know, but I don't know. Listen, by the way, in 100 years, no one will think you were a monster. So you're ahead of the curve. You're definitely ahead of the curve. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey there, beautiful people. I'm Travelle Anderson.
And I'm Jared Hill. We are the hosts of Fanti, the show where we have complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the things that we really, really love sometimes, but also have some problematic feelings about.
Yes, we get into it all. You want to know our thoughts about Nicki Minaj and all her foolishness? We got you. You want to know our thoughts about gentrification and perhaps some positive aspects of gentrification? We get into that too. Every single Thursday, you can check us out at MaximumFun.org. Listen, you know you want it, honey, so come on and get it. Period.
I want to get into this MASH game with you. I play this MASH game at the end of every episode, and I definitely want to start with other cities that you would like to have a second home, not necessarily a vacation home. And even if you don't pick Berlin now, I'm going to use that as a segue to briefly hear what it was about Berlin that shone for you as you were including it with LA and New York.
Yes. If I could pick any city to live in, Berlin would be like high up there, like very, very. I'm struggling to think of another place.
I've never been to Germany. I can't believe it, but I've never been there, so I gotta go.
I've only been once. You should definitely go. I loved it. You will love it. It's amazing.
That's what I hear. All right, it's going to happen. I'm going to go there. Okay, and you're struggling to come up with two more.
Okay.
Good luck to you.
So I would say Cape Town, South Africa.
Also a place I'm dying to go.
Oh my God. Like one of my favorite places on the planet. Let's see, where else? I gotta throw, this is gonna be a little bit of a curveball. Oh, actually I have two. Either Joshua Tree, California, because I love Joshua Tree, or Woodstock, New York, because I love that part of New York. I think it's so beautiful.
Oh, sure. Oh no, let's see. How am I gonna handle this? I've got it. Wait. Well, Woodstock's small too, huh?
It's pretty small.
Okay. let me do this. What if we do a second category that's like, that's the quiet, slow, like thoughtful, contemplative place? Because Berlin and Cape Town, you're going to be out and about.
Yes.
Is there a third out and about place? And then our next category will sort of be like this, the more sanctuary type place that is more of a, like a spiritual getaway. And then we can put, then I can already start out with Joshua Tree and Woodstock.
Yes. Okay. This
and
is
then
actually
you just need one of the worst.
This is perfect how you're breaking this up. I feel like I often feel like I have two wolves inside of me. One of them wants to go to a cosmopolitan city and party and,
yes,
and like rage all night. And the other wants to like sit in the mountains and like, yes, drink tea and like really, you know,
yes,
contemplate. So this is perfect.
Yes.
I would say Brooklyn, New York.
Great.
And then another contemplative city. Is that what, mm-hmm, I'm looking for here?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay. The lake. Well, I guess it's also sort of, well, I'll count it separately. The Lake George area of New York.
Lake George. Okay, wonderful. Okay, next category, let's do three people from history that we get to sort of create this time bubble where you just kind of get to spend the day or a few hours just like talking with this person. Three people that you would love to just be with and sort of experience their perspective for a day.
Ooh, living or dead or?
Let's say dead. We'll take this way back because then we'll do a category that's like people you would love to collaborate who are still around.
Got it.
So this is like more the fantasy side.
Okay, got it. Number one, Nina Simone. She's one of my idols.
Yeah.
Another one would be Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, yes.
Another one would be Ida B. Wells.
Nice. Ida B. Okay. And then next one. Yeah. So three people who are around now that you would love to collaborate with on something. It doesn't even, you know, could be like, yeah, you didn't know I was going to write an album with so-and-so, but I was also going to like write a novel with so-and-so. And then I was going to, you know, totally change this initiative with so-and-so. Like it could be all different kinds of collaborations.
Oh my gosh. Okay. The first one would definitely be Missy Elliott. Also from Virginia.
Hell yeah. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
Virginia girl.
What a badass.
I love her. I love her so much.
She showed up and on the scene, everyone was like, on the national scene, everyone was like, wait, what's going on right now?
I know. She sounded.
Who is this like amazing badass?
Yes.
What is happening?
She's
so unique and special.
Like she was from a different planet, a different time, like completely her own thing. I'm so obsessed with her. I love her so much.
Brilliant.
I would also say living icons. Ooh, I would say this is going to be a little bit of a deep cut, but there is a director who I love, Katya Blitchfield. She created this show on HBO called High Maintenance, which I'm obsessed with.
Yeah, sure.
I interviewed her once and I was like, I'm obsessed with you. So she's definitely up there.
Awesome. Awesome.
And then, you know, speaking of like my fondness for places like Berlin, somebody who was an early childhood icon of mine. Younger folks listening probably have no idea who this is. Do you remember Downtown Julie Brown from MTV?
Oh, hell yeah. Downtown Julie Brown, yeah.
I wanted to be her. When I was young, like I remember seeing her on MTV and I was like, this is like who I want my life to put. I want my life to be her life.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. She definitely seemed like they really found somebody who could seem like she blended seamlessly into the world of celebrity and like a world that you could never imagine being part of. Yet it felt like she also was someone you could hang out with.
Exactly.
Which is a very cool achievement, especially in the early days of, you know, before like when VJs were like, oh, what are VJs? You know, wonderful. Okay. Next category, let's do three movies that you can jump into and just be in. And you're just in the space, in that world. You're not reliving the plot. It's just an opportunity to kind of sink into the world and the feelings that those movies give you.
Got it. Okay. Number one, Clueless.
It's a favorite. It's a favorite. It stands the test of time.
It's so good. It's like a movie that I have memorized.
I love it. I love it.
At number two, Dazed and Confused.
Great. I'm getting some high school vibes here.
Yes.
I'm getting some. It's very true to the time frame. I love it. Dazed and Confused.
Oh, number three. Let's go with. Oh, okay. I got it. I don't want to be involved in like the plot of this movie, but it's
right.
But
and you won't be.
Okay, good. The talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes, great example of a lush, like amazing world, or as we might say, a stylish thriller.
Yes,
I feel like a style. I always want to be in stylish thrillers, but I don't want the tension in my stomach that the stylish thriller action is taking.
Exactly. I don't want to be involved in the like. Plot. I just want to be a side character, like,
yes,
drinking coffee and listening to jazz in Italy.
Exactly. Exactly. This is why this category exists. You played it perfectly. Okay. This is a MASH game. We got to get into some romance or sexy times. Three people. They could be characters, cartoons, literature, real authors, real celebrities, any time, any period. Zero restrictions. Three, and it's not, you could be a long-term companion, or you could be like, I mean, yeah, for one night, I'd love to spend with this character, but I get sick of him after one night. So give me one night stand.
Okay.
It's all up to you.
I dig it. Okay. Number one, Bjork.
Speaking of like another Missy Elliott type,
yes!
You're like, I wish my brain was built the same way. Not, you could never be the same way, but just built in such a way where you're like, I mean, that's not something you can cultivate. That's just, she just is who she is.
She is who she is, and I love every second of it.
Oh, it's amazing. Great. Bjork, love it.
I would also add in Jason Momoa.
Momoa. That's a cool dude right there.
I love him. Ugh, I love him. I couldn't even tell you like a movie that he's in, or like, I just know that whenever I see a picture of him, I like stop. If he's on television, I'm like, oh, Jason Momoa.
Yeah. He's your browsing crush.
Correct. Like, correct.
I just happened upon him and then I just had to stare at him for a while. Great. Bjork, Momoa, all for it. What's your third?
Oh, Dana Scully from The X-Files.
Oh my God. Yes, indeed. Also, just Gillian Anderson. I mean, I don't know if you've caught her on anything current that she does, because, you know, all she's doing all that, the kind of British stuff. Like, Sex Education is
so
a show
good.
I absolutely love. And she is so sexy and so wonderful. Like, come live with me in your beautiful kimono.
Yes, she's incredible. She's incredible. I also was just reading a thing. I think it was the Gina Davis Institute put out a study that some, like maybe like 65% of women who work in like technical or STEM fields were inspired specifically by the character of Dana Scully.
Oh,
which I love
that. Gina Davis, by the way, and the Gina Davis Institute. Go, you go. I mean,
love her.
She's a badass. She's a badass. Okay, last two categories. This category will be three skills that you would love to have and just be brilliant at tomorrow. So it could be something you already do, but you just want to take it to the next level. Or it could be like, I have no aptitude for X, but make me a genius in it.
Ooh, three. This is so good. Okay, one, I would love to be able to be a proficient DJ.
Yeah, I love that.
I would love to be a more, I do it sometimes, but I get nervous every time, a better public speaker.
I'm so hard to imagine that you, okay, but great. You are on the inside of your brain, so you know how you feel about it.
I do it and I think it goes fine, but every time I have to speak in front of a big audience in my head, I'm like, it's going to be awful. You're going to embarrass yourself. And I have to kind of talk myself out of it.
So yeah, we're going to skip you straight to the exuberation of it being, of you being amazing at it as you are. Okay, I love it. All right, what's number three?
Number three, I would love to be a really good driver.
Great.
I know that's kind of a weird one, but I don't really drive a lot. And whenever I do drive, I'm like, oh God, hope I don't hit anything. And then when I'm with my partner who takes driving very seriously, I'm just like, wow, you really just know what you're doing behind the wheel.
Listen, I know a lot of people that I wish they would list driving as their skill they wish they could be better at, and they definitely would never think that they needed to. So I applaud it. I respect it. I salute it. Okay, final category. Ooh, this is where I start to put the pressure on myself. Final category. Let's do, I mean, how do you feel about like, either sort of being able to see a moment in time, either to sort of resolve a mystery or to sort of bear witness to something, easy or hard, but just to sort of have seen it and experienced it to know what it would feel like to have been there, or just something really fun or strange, like, I just want to see a dinosaur, but be in a safety bubble so I'm not going to get smushed or eaten. Anything you would want to see or witness or be a part of or solve from the past?
Ooh, what a good question. Oh, my God.
Okay. We'll keep that category then.
Anything from the past? What a good question. I would loved, yeah, honestly, I would love to have been around in like prehistoric times, like seeing what that, like volcanoes and stuff, like I would have loved to be around then, but in a safety bubble.
In a safety bubble. You're in a safety bubble in any of these.
Yes.
Nothing bad will happen to you. Give me two more if there are.
Okay. I would say, I would have liked to have been in a safety bubble experiencing, you know, I guess like 1960s uprisings, like political uprisings of the 60s. I'd want to be like protected and not fully involved, but just to like check it out.
Yes.
Oh, what's another good one? I would like to... What a good question.
I've been thinking, because this is one of those things where I feel like so many of us are tempted to say or would say the 1920s. But because there was such a, because before World War II, it felt like there was just something was happening with women and like there was more integration of culture and there was something that I feel like we're on the tip of.
Mm.
And then everything changed. And it was like, But weren't you kind of interested how that was going to... So I'm like, oh, it's so cliche. But at the same time, every time I think about it, I think about that era, I'm like, oh, it would have been so interesting to see, to get the energy, that crackling energy of like, something's happening here. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Anyway, that's what I thought. And by the way, I'm not like, you have to say that, but that is what it made me think of when you were talking about the 60s.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I would love... It's so funny coming out of like 2020... where I was like, boy, I would sure love some like precedented times. I'm so sick of like unprecedented times. So
no one ever says, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, we are living in precedented times.
Yes.
Everyone chill out. We are in precedented times.
Yeah. Something else that I would love to have experienced is being on tour with one of those like crazy rock bands of the 60s or 70s where like we're like stuff really got out of hand at this show.
Yeah, probably some of the folks who also were at Woodstock, now that you bring it up. Oh, I'm definitely putting you on a 60s or 70s rock tour.
Yes. I would like that.
Like, and that's when we all thought Stevie Nicks' nose was just going to fall off.
Right.
We just thought it was going to flop right off her face. We're all so glad that that didn't happen. Oh, we love the witch. We love the white witch.
I love her.
Shout out. Okay. All right. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
3.
Okay. While I add up and give you your 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH life, will you please tell people where they can find the various and sundry things you are either hosting or have created or just want people to know about?
Yes, you can follow my podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet. It's on iHeartRadio. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. We tell the story of all the amazing women, queer folks, trans folks, people of color who make our internet and digital experiences awesome. So please check it out. You can
love it.
Follow me on Twitter at Bridget Marie or on Instagram at Bridget Marie in DC.
Okay, great. And I am, you gave me a low number, so listen, I'm speeding through this. I'm zipping along. This is very exciting. I'm loving these. I mean, I love all your choices, so I guess it actually would have been.
I can't wait to see.
Okay, let's do it. This is looking good. All right. Okay. I don't even know where to start. I'm so excited for you. First of all, I just want you to know that you are a dynamo driver.
Yes!
Who's the best driver you're friends with? People will ask all of your friends, and they'll be like, Bridget, thanks. So, fantastic driver. I feel like this is going to come in handy because there's just a lot going on in this alternate MASH universe that you're occupying. For one thing, you have a beautiful home in Berlin.
Ah, yes!
So congrats to that. I also want to congratulate you on your beautiful, beautiful second home in, third home, I guess, in the Lake George area.
Perfect. Love it.
So if you, for your more leisurely contemplative drives.
Yes.
I also want to congratulate you on, and listen, there are probably going to be times where you're going to have to get behind the wheel because you are going on some crazy ass 60s/70s rock tour history visits. And shit's going to get crazy. You may be the designated driver. So again, I cannot emphasize enough how great it is that you're a great driver. I also want to congratulate you on your ability to jump into just the world, not the stressful plot of The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes.
So that kind of works because, you know, you sort of get the Berlin thing going and then you're also like all these other places in Europe as well. You have some time to spend with none other than the legendary Ida B. Wells.
Awesome.
And I don't know how that's going to inform your collaboration with Downtown Julie Brown.
Yes!
But you are definitely going to be making something with this icon as well. And all of this, I can't believe this. I forgot to do the food one. I was so wrapped up in all the places that I was going to take you to travel. I forgot to do like the one I've never missed. So this is, speaking of living in unprecedented times, we're living in the unprecedented mash game of me not giving you three foods that you can have with zero ramifications. I'm throwing them all in. All of the foods. You get all of the foods. And you are going to be having these adventures. And I have to say, in a way, I think I'm just excited because of what we were just talking about vis-a-vis this person. But I'm kind of loving the fact that you're sharing some to all of this with Dana Scully.
Yes, I was hoping for her.
I love it. It is real easy to see Dana Scully walking around the streets of Berlin, I have to say. I mean, Bjork and Momoa for sure also. But I just love the idea of her being like, you know, there's a really great coffee place around the corner from the, you know.
Your Dana Scully is so good. You sound just like her.
I didn't know I had one. Did not know I had one. This is all new to me. Oh my gosh. Bridget, this has been such a joy. And I've been so excited about this. And I just am such a fan of yours. So I just want to say keep it up. And I will be keeping up as well with what you're up to. And I hope we get a chance to do something together. Speaking of collaborating, it'd be so fun to work on something with you at some point. I just think you're the bee's knees.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. I really appreciate it.
Yay. All right, everybody. I will talk to you next week on the podcast.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.